This is Audible.
High Gravity Productions presents Toxic, a dark romance written by Nicole Blanchard. Performed in duet by Michelle Sparks and Aiden Snow. 1. There are mornings when I wake, not knowing or caring what day of the week it is. Sometimes I go whole stretches of time without ever checking the date. I prefer it that way. There's less chance of my having the hope of a better life if all the nothingness blurs together. Above me, my husband labors over my body with practiced movements my own recognizes and responds to, if only out of habit. His head carefully tilts to the side so he doesn't have to look me in the eye. As he's told me countless times,
"Fucking doesn't have to be personal to be effective."
Somehow, he's taught my body to believe him. Played it and tuned it as finely as a musician tunes an instrument. He molds and shapes me to his liking, and I let him, until I'm nothing more than a thing he programs for his pleasure, his real-life porn queen slash sex robot. It's a wonder something so mistreated can still respond to the cause of its neglect. The soft scrape of his buzzed haircut rubs the side of my face raw. It's an irritation I don't dare turn away from. The smell of sex, musk, and lubricant fills my nose, so I switch to moaning from my mouth. He likes it when I make noise, even if it's more for his benefit than any real reaction to anything he's doing between my legs. Fingers bruise the skin on my wrists as easily as they can crush the delicate flesh of a peach. Fingers that once were cause for delight, but now cause nothing but devastation. Vic's movements quicken at my strangled cry until he drives into me at an unrelenting pace. I lift my hips in time with his, if only to stoke to life a spark guaranteed to burn away the nothingness my existence has become. Anything to forget. Each thrust of his cock mixes pleasure and pain until I don't know how to differentiate one from the other. Until they blend into the fathomless darkness I've come to know and love. I reach for it, yearning for it to wrap me in its bleak comfort. His grunts draw me in the other direction, back toward reality. The pleasure ekes away with each of his sharp exhalations in my ear, the keen edge of oblivion dulled to an irritating reminder. An itch to go unscratched. I want to growl and claw at him, but I twist my fists into the bedspread instead and pinch my eyes closed until moisture leaks from the corners and down my cheeks to wet my pillowcase. Beside us on the nightstand, an alarm drones, and I mentally count down the long minutes until he finishes and I can reach over and turn it off. With his arms, a relentless cage around me, he stiffens above me and groans. The promise of oblivion fades, taking the blissful sense of nothingness with it. The beeping punctures the promised haze of relief, and reality claws its way back. The sweat sticking our torsos together reminds me of how dirty I feel, but I know it's best if I don't move. Best just to wait until he gets off me. When he does, I'll roll to my side of the bed, make appreciative noises when he asks if it was all right for me, and then I'll shower and get ready for yet another day. I repeat the lists of tasks in my mind until he leverages his weight on one hand before tossing it to the side with another grunt. I loose a relieved breath and cover myself with a sheet. I've long since lost the ability to sense shame where he's concerned, but there's a part of me, deep down, that always needs to run and hide. He slumps on his back with a satisfied groan and paws at his stomach with one meaty hand.
"You need a shower,"
he says.
"You look like shit."
Another of his not-so-subtle digs. I swallow my angry retort and tell him I will. His attention drifts to the smell of coffee brewing downstairs. As he swings himself off his side of the bed, my breathing and heart rate return to normal, and already I'm counting down the seconds until I can move on with my day, even if I'll just have to start all over again tomorrow morning. He ambles to the desk chair, retrieves his robe, and throws it around his shoulders. Without another word or a backward glance or even a show of concern for the fact that I didn't finish, he walks out of the bedroom and disappears down the hallway. After a few seconds, I hear the sounds of cabinets opening, followed by the click of his coffee cup on the counter and then the sound of liquid splashing. I shove the discomfort to the back of my mind, like I do everything else, and go to take a shower. Hot water doesn't wash away much besides the sweat clinging to my skin. I never understood people who thought showers could make them clean. I feel just as dirty getting out of them as I do going in. There are some things water and soap just can't wash away. I dress in a simple uniform of gray scrubs, blow-dry my long dark hair until it's pinned straight, and then pin it back in a severe bun at the nape of my neck. I only put concealer on the lavender smudges beneath my eyes and run mascara over my lashes, more out of habit than any real concern for my physical appearance. Less is better. The last thing I need is to draw any attention to myself, Vic's or anyone else's. I've become very skilled at blending into the background. With a steadying breath, I turn my back on the mirror and join him in the kitchen. He sits at the table with the paper spread out in front of him, the cup of coffee at his elbow, steam curling from the top. It's a typical morning. Picturesque, almost. The goddamn American dream. All that's missing is the 2.5 kids and the golden retriever. I fill a thermos with coffee and snag a banana for something to fill my deadened stomach. "Have a good day at work," I tell his bowed head as I pass by him to the door. He stops me with one hand on my arm and angles his cheek up to me. I oblige him with a kiss, and he says,
"I'll see you for dinner."
The underlying threat of what will happen if I'm late hangs heavy between us. Dinner is to be served promptly at 6 from an approved menu. The lack of autonomy doesn't matter. I've long since lost the ability to enjoy the food I eat, and it's but one of the aspects of my life he controls. Dismissing me, he turns back to his paper, and I push through the side door that leads to our covered garage. It's February in Upper Michigan, and the cold seeps through my jacket with icy, penetrating fingers. In my haste to leave the house, and my husband, I forgot to grab my gloves. Turning back is unthinkable, so I unlock the car with numb fingers and resolve to deal with it. The drive to work is an arduous process. Roads are slick from the previous night's snow. I'm too early for the sweepers, but don't have time to wait for them to clear the way. The layer of ice underneath the fresh dusting crunches as I pull up to the gate to flash my identification. The officer on duty, Ernie, pokes his head out of the ancient window, his cheeks blazing red. Despite his bushy white eyebrows, I can't miss his appraisal. Without a word, I hand over my badge. Any friendly good morning I'd planned wilts as Ernie's eyes linger on the V of my uniform, bared by my unzipped jacket. When he finally turns away, I wait as he scans it into the computer. I want to snap at him and tell him to keep his eyes to himself. But I don't. He'll spend the rest of the day out here in the cold, I tell myself. His suffering is a comfort. I didn't always used to be so cold-hearted, and as I wait, the irritation I'd repressed from losing the pleasant numbness this morning comes back a thousandfold. Only this time, it's directed at Ernie. My complacency and his blatant ogling reminds me of what Vic has turned me into, and I want to take my rage out on Ernie by grabbing his neck and slamming his face into the window frame. The spurt of anger shocks me, and I jump as Ernie leans forward with my badge.
"Whoa there, steady,"
he says, as if I'm some spooked horse he can calm down.
"Must be jittery because of the big day."
I make sure to take my ID between two fingers so I don't have to touch him again. My concentration is so absolute, it takes a few long seconds of silence for me to realize he's waiting for my response.
"Why's that?"
I ask, knowing there are eyes on me, even now, that will report back to my husband, who, as warden of Blackthorn, isn't to be crossed. Despite my feelings, I must play the dutiful wife and make pleasant conversation because any employee I encounter has the potential to relay my actions back to Vic. Ernie pulls a face.
New arrivals?
He says slowly.
Didn't you hear? One of them's supposed to be a real piece of work.
Eyelids shuddering closed for a second at the memory of last night's conversation with my husband. I do recall him mentioning that I should be extra careful today. Apparently, one of the new inmates is high risk. He must be, if he warranted such a warning. Must be the president himself, I remember to say. Ernie snorts.
I'm sure he thinks he is. You be careful now. Wouldn't want one of them criminals roughing up that beautiful face of yours.
Laughter bubbles in my chest and nearly breaks free. For a moment, it threatens to overtake me, but I choke it back and wave to a bewildered Ernie as I pull my car into the parking lot. The quick dash from my car to the entrance takes an eternity. In the interim, I lose all sensation south of my kneecaps, and the tips of my fingers and nose tingle with numbing heat. As I step into the dank front office, I daydream about sandy beaches, coconut drinks, and crowds big enough to lose myself in. It doesn't matter how much I think about it, though. A tiny part of my mind knows that these prison walls are my reality. I push through the main employee entrance, tow off my sensible shoes, and hand them and my lunch bag to the officer manning the metal detector. He nods good morning, but doesn't engage me in useless conversation. His eyes barely even register my presence. Once I have my shoes back on, I retrieve my keys to medical from the control room. The officer on duty pauses before handing them over. I've learned it's best to wait little power plays like this out, so I stare at the paunchy, middle-aged man until he speaks.
You've got a patient this morning.
Oh? I say without inflection, though it does pique my curiosity that I haven't been at work 10 minutes and already someone's waiting for treatment. Who is it? The officer pulls back, and I know I should have just kept moving. It isn't as if I won't find out who the patient is in a few minutes. I glance to the doors, hinting that I would like for him to let me through, and he relents without answering my question. The inner hallway is as silent as a tomb for once. The hush is so uncharacteristic that I keep looking behind myself, expecting someone to jump out from one of the doorways. The walk to medical is a long one, and I'm on such tenterhooks that I don't even look up as I unlock the door. My eyes are on my feet as I put my lunch in the fridge in the small office they have for the nurses on call. I swing around to pick up the charts from the overnight patients and nearly gasp when I realize I'm not the only person in the room. I open my mouth to call out or to question his presence, but something stops me. Without a word, the man sitting on the examining table in front of me manages to do what it took my husband 2 years to learn. How to shut me up with just one glance. The hair on the back of my neck prickles as my body recognizes a predator in its midst. The layer of muscle underneath my skin contracts, preparing for flight, even as I take a step closer to the prisoner in front of me. The other officers and nurses are in the infirmary, which is close, but at the same time, an eternity away. There is nothing stopping this man from hurting me. It only takes one glance at him to know it's entirely within his capabilities, should it serve his means. Taut muscles, which are too large for the standard issue prison uniform, stretch against the confines of the top. Ropes of ink snake around his right forearm and his left bicep. My throat bobs reflexively as my eyes flash up to his. He doesn't taunt me, but his smile speaks more loudly than words. 2. I've been a nurse at Blackthorn Correctional Institute for 5 years, so dealing with inmates from the docile to the deadly isn't new. None of the tricks of the trade I've learned work to calm my panic when he directs the full force of his attention to me. Did they tell you to wait here for your receiving exam? I ask, and I'm grateful when my voice doesn't betray my sudden nerves. He lifts a shoulder, the material of his blood-smeared jumpsuit rustling in the otherwise quiet exam room. Even though warning bells are going off in my head, I take careful steps forward until I reach the end of the examining table where he's perched. Most of the men who come here for care know better than to mess with the staff, but there's always the chance that today will be the day one of them changes their mind. So when I reach for the clipboard hanging from a clip on the end of the bed that has his information on it, I do so with one eye on him. Something tells me it would be a bad idea to turn my back on him. After a few careful steps back to allow for some much-needed space, I hazard a glance at his chart. There's no name on it, just his inmate number, which turns my insides to ice and washes away any doubts I may have had about how dangerous he is. It's probably the blood. A lot of prisoners get into fights with other inmates or officers during transport, but someone must have patched him up sometime between. There's a bandage on his nose and tape on the apple of his cheek. The blood on his mouth must be from a tooth that got knocked out, maybe, or a cut in his lip. Either way, there's nothing that needs my immediate attention. But it reminds me to be cautious. It says here you didn't do the medical history questionnaire with the officers before they brought you here. He nods. Okay, we'll start with that. I move to my desk and settle myself into my space. Are you seeing a physician for any ongoing illness or health issue? He shakes his head, and I mark it down. Aside from the scrapes and bruises, I don't need the evaluation to tell me he's in perfect health. Vitality exudes from him, tempting me closer. Years of lessons at Vic's hands force me to keep my distance, but I can't help but wonder what it would be like to have this man's attention on me in a different setting. I glance back down at the questionnaire to redirect my thoughts. As the gears of my brain grind to a halt, I tap the pin on the side of the clipboard, trying in vain to rally the remains of my professionalism. Are you taking any prescription or over-the-counter medication? He gives another shake of his head, and it occurs to me we may go through this whole interview without him ever saying a word. We do. He answers every question with a nod or a head shake. I learn he's never had a major surgery, has no allergies, and has no familiar history of any major diseases, without ever knowing his name or the sound of his voice. Once I come to the end of the medical history, I stop worrying about him trying anything. If he were going to hurt me, he would have done it by now. I've done these intake screenings 1,000 times. So once I get in the groove, it gets easier to forget my first impression of him, along with my intrigue, and go through the motions. Let's get you on the scale now so I can get a record of your current weight. He grunts, which I take as his agreement, and I nod to the scale by the office door. Despite his bulk, he moves with the grace of a feline as he crosses the room. The scale clangs as he steps up, and I busy myself with adjusting the measurements and making notes on the chart. When I glance up again, I have to stifle a gasp because he's staring at me with startling intensity. Blatant curiosity makes his gaze sharp and causes my stomach to flip with nerves and arousal, the likes of which I haven't felt in, oh, years. It's a reaction that, if I were to act on it, could land me in 10 different kinds of federal trouble. Let's get your height now. I indicate the measuring tape affixed to the wall next to us, and he shuffles over obediently. All the while, he eyes me with a puzzled expression, as if I'm a problem he's determined to solve. He submits to my handling as I record his height. 6 feet of animal male towers over my 5'6" frame. Without thinking, I shove up the long sleeves of my scrubs as I record his measurements and check the clock as I desperately count down to my first break. I just got here and I'm already impatient for 10:30 to roll around so I can get 15 minutes of solitude. A shiver runs down my spine, and like the prey I am, I freeze before forcing myself to look to the doorway. I expect to see Vic standing there, watching me. That's the only explanation I have for the way my whole body freezes and the urgent need to flee takes over. I scan the room, certain he's there waiting for me to do something wrong. Like breathe without his permission. Instead of my husband's eyes on me, it's the inmate's attention that's causing my panic. My gaze follows his, and when I move to hide my wrists, his muscles go rigid. Dark, purpling bruises encircle my wrists from the vicious grip Vic had this morning in bed. Sweat beads on my upper lip, and my ears ring. Frozen in stasis, I can't think of an appropriate response or excuse. Not that I need to give him, of all people, an excuse. After a moment of suspense-laden pause where my eyes flit to his narrowed ones, I turn my back on him and head to the infirmary to call the officers back for their prisoner. Since we always seem to be understaffed, it isn't uncommon for them to split between both rooms. And right now, I'm cursing that for all it's worth. I don't make it that far. I should have known better. Every instinct since I stepped into the room has been telling me to keep my guard up, because the moment I took my eyes off him, he'd pounce. And fuck me, it's exactly what happens. In the long space of a protracted moment, he's so close to my back, his warmth surrounds me. He pins me between his body and the wall, his front to my back. A stab of profound fear engulfs me, and I can't control the whimper that explodes from my throat. He doesn't make the mistake of touching me, but the threat is there nonetheless, which is exactly what he wants me to know. He may be the one behind bars, but he's the one with the power right now. He speaks for the first time, and my body turns to ice. At least I hope it's ice. The only other explanation is one I won't even consider.
Did someone hurt you, little mouse?
His voice is as empty and hard as his gaze was. An abyss of secrets and lies. He shifts but still doesn't touch me as he leans forward and inhales. Is he smelling my hair?
Is that why you look like you want to crawl back into a hole?
Words are an impossibility. It doesn't seem to matter to him because he goes on speaking.
What's a girl like you doing in this place anyway, hmm?
He doesn't expect me to answer, so I don't. I don't think I could if I tried. He nudges my shoulder, touching me for the first time to indicate he wants me to turn around. So I do, making sure to keep a wary eye on him. Breath stutters past my lips in staccato bursts, my hands clench into fists by my sides. His hands raise, and I flinch. My reaction is so subtle that I wouldn't expect him to even notice, but his eyes flash to mine in abrupt understanding. There's a tug at the breast pocket of my scrubs, but I don't dare look away from his gaze. I can only wait. White etches into my vision as he raises my ID card to his line of sight. I shiver from the ice collecting in my stomach as he studies my picture and name.
Tessa Emerson, R.N.
He murmurs, peering deeply into my eyes.
It's nice to officially meet you. I suspect we'll be seeing a lot of each other.
Maybe it's the morning spent underneath my grunting husband. Maybe it's the all-too-self-assured gleam in this criminal's eyes. Maybe it's insanity. Whatever it is, it builds inside me. My skin pulls tight, and I almost expect it to crack and split. But it doesn't. Instead, my arms shoot forward, and I shove at his chest with my palms. They come in contact with the wall of firm muscle, emphasizing how impotent I am. It doesn't move his mountainous form, but he relents and gives me a few scant inches of breathing room, which I desperately need. The air between us is thick with tension, and I find myself drawing it in with greedy gulps, but it isn't enough. My flare of anger seems to please him, though, because the creases at the corner of his eyes twitch and he bares his teeth in a feral grin. I find my voice, my irritation growing at his amusement. I'm the one in control. Back away, I order, willing a bit of steel into my voice. He holds up his hands in a show of uncharacteristic complacency as the officers choose the next moment to make their appearance. Their eyes swivel back and forth between the inmate and me until they finally stay trained on me.
Is everything okay here?
One of them asks. I could report his misconduct, but even as the thought occurs to me, I know I won't. What's worse is he seems to read my mind on the matter, and his smirk widens. Explaining what happened to an officer will only mean whispers will leak back to my husband, and I'll pay the price. For the first time, I resent this life Vic's forced me to live. The officer who spoke impatiently sucks through his teeth. The sound skitters over my sensitized skin like an unwelcome insect, and I shiver. "Fine," I answer a few seconds later, unable to stomach the uncomfortable pause. "Everything is fine." Everything is most assuredly not fine. Blood drips from my nose and I can't see out of my right eye. The dark red liquid splatters on the pristine tile floor and races along the grout line. Vaguely, I contemplate how long it will take for me to scrub it out, as my husband grips my hair and wrenches me back to my feet.
"You made me look like a fool,"
he says, spit flying from his lips. No doubt the handsomely compensated officers had run to Vic the moment they left the infirmary. It didn't matter that nothing had happened between the prisoner and me. It didn't matter that I'd never laid a hand on the man, outside of trying to push him out of my personal space. What mattered was whatever fucked up scenario Vic imagined in his twisted little brain. To absolve my imagined sins, he is subjecting me to his version of torture. Till death do us part, right? I'd gone to the police before to report his abuse. I went so far as to press charges. I was terrified. But I did what I thought I had to do to save myself. But the Honorable Judge Edward Milton, I'd never forget his name, dropped the case. Instead of Vic being punished, I was the one sentenced and written off as an emotionally unstable woman. Now I do the only thing I can. Endure. My eyes move to the stain in the grout, and I start listing the ways to remove it. First, scrub the stain with a sponge and some cold water. Vic. He hates to be called Victor, as I learned the first night he hit me on our honeymoon. Backhands me, making my head snap to the side. The force of the blow knocks me back, causing the hair still wrapped in his hand to rip from my scalp. If that doesn't remove the stain, then use a toothbrush with baking soda.
"I don't want you associating with that inmate again, do you hear me? McNair and Summers couldn't stop smirking at me when they found me. You humiliated me."
I swallow back the blood pooling in my mouth, my eyes still on the stained tiles. The metallic taste lingers in the back of my throat and burns its way down to my stomach. It settles there, a stone dropped into a pond of bile. Then he kicks me in the stomach for good measure, and the stone disintegrates with the force of my rage. "I understand," I say, though the word comes out as a quaver. I let him assume it's due to fear. His fist tightens in my hair, forcing my head back until his disdainful expression fills my vision.
"See that you do,"
he murmurs.
"When you see him again, I don't want to hear about you flirting with him. Do you understand me?"
He knows there are circumstances when only one nurse is on call, but I nod anyway. There's no use in pointing it out. In times like these, logic only seems to feed Vic's madness.
"I want to hear you say it."
His words are grit as he spits them at me. "When I see him again, I won't flirt with him." I repeat, mechanically, blood dribbling down my chin from where I bit my cheek to keep from saying what I want to say. He reels away, wiping his hands on his suit pants and sneering as I crumple to the floor. The cold tile pressed against my face grounds me, and I dig my fingernails into the piling of the rug instead of into his face.
"Clean yourself up before you make dinner."
He pauses to peer into the mirror and preen.
"I think I'd like steak tonight."
He leaves me in a ball, blood steadily dripping into the grout. It takes me a minute before I can pull myself to a sitting position. Every scream of a muscle fuels the same flush of rage that inspired me to shove at that inmate. I retrieve a sponge from underneath the sink and imagine what would happen if I did the same thing to Vic. 3. The only good thing about Vic's fist in my face is it guarantees I won't be required to fuck him for at least a few days. According to him, he doesn't fuck ugly. In his way, I suppose it's an underhanded compliment. Though it's his fault I have a split lip and black eye in the first place. I call into work during the time it takes for the swelling to go down and feign the stomach flu. My face isn't exactly back to normal, at least normal enough to cover the bruises with makeup. Vic's forgotten what pissed him off enough to plant his fist in my eye, at least for now. Thankfully, I've been able to placate him with blowjobs and his favorite meals, and he's returned to a bittersweet temperament. Sweet in that he dotes on me, bitter because I know it's only a matter of time until he'll want me to fuck him again. I both dread and crave the release it will provide, but I'm afraid he'll be able to tell how much touching him turns my stomach. He chatters as he gets dressed, and I do my best to ignore him. It isn't as easy as it used to be, not when I keep imagining what it would be like to pour the scalding hot coffee over his balding head or accidentally dump antifreeze in his oatmeal. I never used to fantasize about what it would be like to cause him harm, but each time he beats me, the fantasies get more and more vivid. In the week I've been off from work, I've started to lose grasp on what's real and what isn't as I wait for whatever horrible punishment he has for me next.
Did you hear me?
Vic asks. I wince as I dab concealer a little too hard over the bruises surrounding my eye and then blink rapidly. The mental byplay I'd been having where I jabbed my cuticle scissors into the meat of his thigh melds with reality, and I refocus on the mirror and Vic, who's standing behind me. I'm sorry, I say once I find the words. They aren't as easy to force out as they once were. I was thinking about work. Can I get you a cup of coffee? He stares at my reflection in the mirror, long enough to cause my heart rate to kick up a notch. When he only lays a hand on my shoulder and squeezes it, I release the breath I'm holding.
No sugar,
he says as he turns to put on his shoes. I follow his movements until he strides down the hall. Only then do I relax my spine. I'm not the only one who's been acting peculiar this past week. Vic's been overly solicitous, slower to anger, and dare I say it, considerate. It only makes me more suspicious. I've been so on edge, I have barely been able to eat or sleep. Work will be a vacation at this point. Before he can holler at me to hurry, I manage to focus enough to finish getting dressed. I'd like to leave my hair down to cover the shadows on my cheeks, but it's against regulations, so I plait it back into a twist. People at work have gotten disappointingly used to my excuses, so I doubt anyone will even bother to ask about my appearance. If I'm lucky, today will be slow, and I won't have as many patients to treat either. Vic is waiting in the kitchen, and I scurry like the good little girl I am and prepare him a thermos of coffee. He watches over my shoulder, and I lift my cheek to receive his kiss as I press the thermos into his hands. I fantasize about bashing it over his skull and can almost hear the sharp crack it would make, how his body would crumple to the ground and how the blood and coffee would spill across the tile. As he whistles on his way out the door, I decide it's a good thing I know how to get bloodstains out of grout, just in case. There are two nurses and medical assessing patients when I get to work, but the infirmary is empty. I spend too much time throughout the early morning replaying the events from breakfast in my head and trying to decide if I've finally gone over the edge. It's why, when I look up and see the last prisoner I want to see standing in the doorway, I freeze, certain I'm hallucinating. What the hell is he doing here?
Work detail.
He answers, and I realize I must have spoken aloud. Furious to find myself feeling concerned and even embarrassed, I turn away from him. Corralling my emotions and impulses is like trying to keep waves from wetting the sand. No matter how many barricades I put up, some of it always manages to spill over the edges. Having him around isn't going to help. I've only met him once, and I feel like he can see past those barricades and right through me. Even worse, he makes me want to tear them down and show him all my soft and vulnerable parts. Since when? I ask, when I can look at him without wanting to run in the opposite direction. Working in medical is a coveted position by inmates. His presence can only mean Vic has changed his tactics. I knew his mood was too good to be true. He was using this prisoner to remind me who has the power in our relationship, and if I put a single toe out of line, I'll be punished. He lifts a shoulder and shoves his hands in his pockets.
Couple of days ago.
My teeth clack together in an automatic response to the heated words determined to spew forth. I guess Vic's beatings are good for something. If nothing else, they've taught me to control my sarcastic mouth. They could use you in medical for the long-term patients. Before I've even finished the sentence, he's shaking his head.
They told me to come in here.
Then he smiles a little. The bastard's enjoying watching me squirm. Fine. The mornings will be slow, but you can start by organizing the supplies in the cabinet. Anything to keep him out of my personal space. I doubt he even understands the meaning of personal space. His smile widens just a fraction, and I'm thankful for the guards who rotate between medical and the infirmary. Without another word, I look back down at the paperwork and jot down some more notes. My brain is full of white cotton, though, and I barely remember what I've written. I keep seeing flashes of the twisted fantasies I've been having of Vic. Only now they have the added horror of the prisoner's heated gaze on the fruits of my self-destruction. Get it together, Tessa. The tip of my pen digs into the piece of paper, and I curse under my breath when it rips right through and scrapes against the surface of the desk. I'm such a mess. I mentally sigh. Oh, who am I kidding? I've always been a mess. My life has been a train wreck from the start. Abusive father, absent mother. I was born strung out on drugs and abandoned. I didn't see my parents until 2 months later when the doctors believed I was stable enough to withstand going home. Child Protective Services kept a wary eye out, sure, but I was one of the lucky ones who slipped through the cracks. I guess I'd been good at being invisible even as a baby. It wasn't surprising that Vic saw the victim I was born to be.
Are you all right?
Comes the prisoner's voice, an indeterminable amount of time later. I don't know how long I sit and stare at the ripped sheet of paper, any more than I'm aware why his question fills me with such sadness. Then again, I don't know why I do many of the things I do these days. I'm fine, I say, pleased to note my response is toneless and apathetic. I find myself slipping into the same numb state I revert to when Vic decides to force himself between my thighs. Like I'm viewing my life from the outside in, from a place where nothing and no one can truly hurt me. When you finish with the cabinet, the beds could use a fresh change of sheets. I indicate the shelving with neatly folded squares of sickly green. I force myself to go back to the paperwork I've been filling out, certain he will do as instructed if I continue to ignore him. The tediousness of the task distracts me in my newly numb state, and a few minutes pass before I think to look up to check and make sure he hasn't decided to buck my orders. He hasn't moved an inch to take care of the beds. If anything, he's closer than he was moments ago. With a sigh, I get to my feet and head to the door that leads to medical to find another nurse to deal with him. But I think better of it. I won't run from this confrontation. And if we're going to work together, he's going to learn to put up with a woman giving him orders. With great difficulty, I return to the room where he waits, hip propped against the desk where I'd been working. What do you need? I ask, pointedly looking between the shelf, the beds, and him. I want to get this over as soon as possible, and I don't care if he knows it. He thrusts a sheet of paper at me.
We never finished the other day.
A snort of derision escapes me. I slap a hand over my mouth, startled by my reaction. My widened gaze flits up to him, but I find a smile instead of a frown. It's just a quirk of the lips, but what is most arresting are his eyes. I was too distracted when we first met to notice them, but they're a shade of green I've never seen before. So bright, they look almost chemically altered. When I can drag my gaze away, I realize he isn't smiling anymore, and I'm staring. My mouth firms into a line as I take the paper from him before turning my back on him and moving toward my desk. Our short history has already taught me I'd be better served to keep my distance at all times. With a businesslike tone, I go through the questions, hoping to conclude the interview quickly. I don't make the mistake of looking up again, and after a quarter hour, I've finished without incident. I hand him back the paperwork. "Will that be all?" I ask, with a sharp glance at the shelves for him to get back to work. But he just scoots closer on the stiff wooden seat and braces his elbows on the edge of the desk. He shifts and directs his stare to my wrists, as though reminding me of what caused the tension and all too delicate awareness in the first place. He's a snake waiting to strike, waiting to ask questions I don't want to answer. So I pull my own hands back and lay them across my thighs where he can't inspect them. "Stay professional, Tessa," I remind myself as I imagine blood-stained tiles and searing pain of mechanical sex and labored grunts. If I'm going to have to put up with him, it would be a mistake to let him cross any more lines. Those eyes come back to mine, and he cocks his head to the side, and I realize what a futile attempt it would be. Apparently, this man makes it his mission to cross all the lines. "I have work to do, if that's okay with you." His eyes narrow, and I dig my nails into my palms at the fierce look on his face.
"Your men enjoy putting those on you,"
he says with a nod at my face and the bruises I must not have covered completely. "That's none of your business." I get to my feet to put some distance between us. A helpless glance through the small window into the central area of medical shows the nurses in an in-depth discussion or attending patients. I don't want to draw too much attention to us. If I do, the news will surely get back to Vic. But I also want him to leave. Caught. Trapped. One look in his direction shows he knows and delights in it. I keep one eye on him and the other on the nurses so I can shoo him away as soon as they pay one iota of attention to us. Seconds tick away like hours, and even though I'm screaming at myself to do otherwise, I don't move when he gets to his feet and does his prowling shuffle until he's standing right next to me. He's so close, I can smell the soap he must have used in the shower. It isn't a complicated scent, not like the expensive cologne my husband puts on like it's his mission to bathe in it. On this big, dangerous man, the scent is elusive. It hides secrets. Secrets my nose wants to investigate. I want to search out all the hollows where it hides and map them, discover each and every hiding place, and plunder and plot until there aren't any places left unexplored.
"And what if I say I'm making it my business?"
he murmurs. The rough cloth of his jumpsuit hisses as he lifts his hands to trace the shadowed bruises on the rise of my cheek. Shock washes through me, a cold dip in a frigid river, followed by a heated blast of shame. I put distance between us and cross my arms over my chest. "Then you'd be wasting your time." Those green eyes study me, as if they know exactly what I was thinking just a few seconds before. Nerves clamor inside me, and I pray silently for a riot, a rash of stomach viruses, a goddamn epidemic, anything to distract this man's laser-like focus.
"I don't think I would."
"Look, Mr.—" I remember I don't even know his name, and huff out of breath, irritated with us both. "Look, what I do in my personal life is none of your business. Now, if you'll excuse me, we both have work to do."
"A woman like you."
His deep, dark voice follows, even as I brush by him to go back to my paperwork.
"Doesn't deserve to be treated that way."
I spin around. "You don't know me at all." Not that it matters. Not that I'd ever leave the prison of my own making. The apparent derision is evident. He's a prisoner, a criminal. His expression turns predatory.
"What if I said I wanted to get to know you?"
I don't dignify that with a response. He's obviously the type of guy who enjoys the cat and mouse game, snaring his prey and watching them suffer. I have one overbearing man in my life. I don't need another. At my silence, he says,
"Come on, Tessa. What do you have to lose? It's not like I can do anything while I'm here. There are guards in the other room, and besides, we're going to be working together. Let's not make it more awkward than it has to be.
It's not awkward now. We work, and that's it. I don't see why there's any reason to get to know each other. My claw and curiosity notwithstanding, I know it's in my own best interest to keep professionalism at the forefront of our interactions.
Fine. You can get to know me. Ask me anything you want to know.
He grins.
I'm an open book.
I highly doubt that. I smother my smile by turning away so he can't see it.
You know you want to.
He says over my shoulder. He's right. I do, more than I probably should. More than as professional. In fact, my interest is most certainly unprofessional. I'll cave, but only so we can get back to work.
Whatever you say.
I hear the smile in his words.
Shoot.
I consider my options as I sort through patient files I've already organized. I could ask his name, but I'm not sure I want to know. Somehow, I feel like knowing will make him all too real, too powerful. The same for whatever crime he committed that landed him in prison in the first place. Murder, rape, assault, robbery. None of the answers lead to anything good. Too many things in my life are too complicated, and this rapport with him is effortless. Even though I know it's wrong, I want to keep it that way, at least for now. Where are you from? That seems safe enough.
That's too easy, but I'll give it to you. I'm from Georgia originally.
His smile is saccharine sweet as his accent deepens.
A good old southern boy, just without the manners.
Clearly.
What about you?
He asks as he finally starts to strip one of the beds. I've always lived here. He dumps the dirty sheets in a bin and then grabs a fresh set from the shelf.
Really?
Yes, really.
You realize there's a whole hemisphere with sun, right?
Sun? I say with a laugh. What's that? We lock eyes, and my heart beats a clipped rhythm in my chest. I refocus back on the files, the rhythmic hum of the air conditioner, and the swish of fabric fills the silence. This was a bad idea.
You deserve better, you know.
He says after a few minutes. The filing drawer shuts with an echoing clang. Oh, so what? You think you would treat me better? Thankfully, just as he's about to break my fragile composure, the door opens and another patient walks in. The guards escorting him hover by the doorway until I dismiss them with a nod. I cross quickly to the new arrival's side, beaming a touch too brightly at their timely appearance. This inmate, whose jumpsuit name tag identifies him as Salvatore, is cradling one bleeding hand with the other.
Cut myself in the kitchen,
he explains. Let's get that taken care of, I say, as I lead Salvatore to an empty bed where he reclines with a grunt. His face ashen. You sit right here, and we'll have that stitched up in no time. I turn to get my supplies from the very storage closet I had him organize and find green eyes still waiting, watching. Except this time, his focus is on the patient. You're welcome to get back to work, I tell him with forced nonchalance.
Yes, Mrs. Emerson.
He hands me the kit I was going to get. Eyes bright with unshed laughter. I lift a shoulder before taking the kit from him. Suit yourself.
I normally do, but I'll tell you what. I'll let you get back to your work here, and I'll stay out of your way for the rest of the day if you do me one favor.
My responding smile is calm, or at least I hope so. What is that?
Tell me. Admit to me who hurt you, and I'll leave you alone.
His voice is barely a whisper when he asks it, so I know Salvatore couldn't possibly have heard. The paper from the suture kit crinkles under my strangling hold. He's too close. Not physically. No, he's not trying to crowd me right now. He's too close emotionally, psychologically. Those green eyes are more than just pretty window dressing. Something tells me he sees far more than I'd ever be comfortable with. Why does it matter so much to you? He leans against the door jamb.
You're avoiding answering the question. Trying to keep me here longer?
His eyebrow lifts in question. My throat bobs with a swallow because I was right. He can read me too well. He knows I don't want to answer the question. Not only because I'm afraid of what it'll mean if I do, but because it wouldn't matter if I shouted my problems from the rooftops. There isn't one person in my life that cares what happens to me, not one. I'm surrounded by hundreds of people who are supposed to uphold the law, but they let Vic get away with everything he does to me. That isn't something that is going to change. Then I realize how pissed Vic would be if I did tell this man what he does to me. What does this no-name inmate matter anyway? He'll eventually screw up and get transferred. After that, I'll never have to see him again. This is my one chance to let someone know, to reach out and connect. I've been isolated for so long, I'm practically vibrating with the need for positive attention from someone. Anyone, even if it's the last person on earth I should want it from. My husband. I say quietly and then turn back to attend to my waiting patient. The sound of my heartbeat fills my ears as I carefully unwrap the sutures and prepare to close Salvatore's wound. I shouldn't have told him that. I shouldn't have given him the advantage. I shouldn't have let him think he could have power over me in any fashion. But I did. And no doubt, I'll suffer the consequences. 4. He's quiet for the rest of the shift, almost eerily so. I keep peering up at him as he disposes of medical waste, changes sheets, and mops around each patient, waiting for him to press me for more information. He doesn't, which can only be part of whatever game he's playing. For the first time in maybe forever, it's almost a relief to leave the infirmary during my lunch break. The escape I get from my work is one of the only aspects of my life to bring me joy. To have it ruined puts a sour taste in my mouth as I try to force down the leftover sautéed chicken and vegetables I brought from home. I let the sounds of the staff cafeteria wash over me and try to forget the 4 tense hours I spent skirting around what felt like a live grenade. A few more weeks of working with him, and I'm going to be as taut as a bowstring, ready to snap at the slightest provocation. Vic will certainly enjoy toying with me about it. Appetite thoroughly thwarted by the thought, I dump my trash in the bin and make my way back to the infirmary. As I grow closer, the few bites I did manage to get down churn in my stomach and threaten to make a reappearance. I lick my dry lips and silently berate myself for not getting a bottle of water from the vending machine. As I pass the hall to exit, I give a fleeting thought to pleading off work for the rest of the day so I don't have to go back and face him. But I don't. I've been absent long enough. Another day would probably raise suspicion, even for me, and it would certainly piss Vic off. Medical is busy with regular patients taking their after-lunch medications. I nod to one of the new nurses, Annie, and a veteran, Patricia, who both smile, if a little absently, in return. Their gazes slide over me, and my attention falls on the doors to the infirmary. I paste on a relaxed smile in case anyone is watching and force my feet to carry me the rest of the way to the door. The room is empty. I don't dare call out for him, too afraid to break the tenuous silence. Doing so would only admit to a part of me wanting to see him again, which is ridiculous. As I take my seat at my desk, I decide that the less time we spend together, the better. I pull a stack of paperwork in front of me, my hand poised to write. But the tip of the pen stops, hovering just above the page of scrap paper sitting on top of my file. I blink several times, trying to comprehend what I'm seeing. Then I realize, awestruck, the face I'm looking at is my own. I push away from my desk and run both of my hands over my hair. My breathing is erratic and harsh, even to my ears. My face feels hot, and the tips of my fingers are numb. I rub my eyes with my knuckles, but there's no mistaking the exquisitely rendered drawing in front of me. It must have been done today, because my hair is in the same braided twist, and I'm working on Salvatore. whose frame is but a shadow in front of me, my expression a quiet study of concentration. When had he done this? I'd kept him busy, so we didn't have time for any more probing questions. It must have been after I left for lunch. In it, I look almost beautiful. Serene. Is this what he sees when he looks at me? At the bottom corner, in a slashing masculine scrawl, is one word. King. I don't know how to handle my response or what to do with this information, so I carefully fold the drawing into a small rectangle and tuck it into my pocket. I'm not too closed off that I don't acknowledge the rush of tenderness I felt the moment I realized he'd paid such attention to me, but that's a dangerous emotion. So I tuck away my emotions along with the drawing for examination when they don't feel so terrifyingly close to the surface. A knock comes at the door, and I whirl around with my heart in my throat. It sinks when I realize it's just Annie.
"Got one for you,"
she says, cheerfully ignorant of my inner turmoil. "Thank you," I say, and lead the groaning inmate to a bed. The next inmate assigned to the infirmary work detail arrives shortly after that, and I don't know if I'm relieved or disappointed when it isn't King. It turns out Vic hadn't placed King in the infirmary to torture me. Whoever had King assigned to the infirmary was either powerful or well-connected. Vic complained about it for days afterward, and he did his best complaining with his fists. As warden of Blackthorn, he enjoyed controlling his little kingdom down to the smallest detail. When he didn't get his way, I was the one who paid for it. This time, he was careful not to mark me up where anyone could see. But he couldn't hurt me where it really mattered. With the constant promise of seeing King again, there was a bright flame of hope inside me that not even the pain Vic inflicted could diminish. Still, each day I worked with King in the infirmary, there was a heavy silence between us. A week later, the flu swept through one of the blocks, leaving little time for me to notice the tension. After seeing the sketch and knowing how he viewed me, the urge to let him get just a little bit closer has been almost stronger than my self-preservation. It's a constant battle to keep my mouth shut and our short chats solely on work. Vic's relentless whining, badgering, and beatings don't help either. I can feel myself unraveling with each passing day, and I certainly look it. The smudges under my eyes from lack of sleep make my olive skin tone appear wan and drawn under the fluorescent lighting. I haven't been able to stomach much food in the past couple of weeks, which has made my cheekbones sharper, my eyes hollow. Hell, even my clothes hang on my frame instead of hugging my curves. I'm fading away right before my eyes, and if I don't do something soon to save myself, there won't be anything left.
"Why do you stay?"
King asked me one day. I turned slowly, mindful of my ribs. "Stay where?" I ask, even though we both know what he's talking about. I knew he'd been biding his time to poke into all my soft spots. I should have known he'd choose a moment when I felt most vulnerable. My eyes go to the door, but for the first time since the flu blew through, there are no patients. I never thought I would miss the chaos of full-grown men throwing up and complaining like children about hot and cold flashes. Now, there's a somber, almost mellow feeling in the air. If I weren't stranded with temptation personified, I would have classified it as a good day. He gives me a look that says, "Drop the bullshit," and I almost smile. Warmth unfurls inside me in places long since frozen. "I'm afraid of what he could do to me if I leave." I shouldn't be surprised at my own admission, but I am. He plants his legs wide and cracks his knuckles at his sides. His green eyes turn flinty and hard. I don't know why he's in prison, but it wouldn't surprise me if his rap sheet contains a long list of violent crimes.
"You should be more concerned about what he's doing to you now."
A vein pulses at his temple, and his jaw flexes as he grinds his teeth to keep from saying any more than he already has. My own back snaps straight at his accusation, warm, fuzzy feelings forgotten. "I handle myself just fine." I'd forgotten how fast he moves, and a second later, he's inches away. So close, I can see the pulse beating in his throat. Instinctively, my hands fly up in front of me, and I swear he presses forward so that I'm forced to lay my palms against his chest. He's so different from Vic, it's a shock to my system to have his body touching mine. I haven't touched another man, despite Vic's constant accusations of my infidelity, and to do so makes me yelp and turn my head away. I push against him, but it's like trying to move a boulder. He doesn't budge. My mouth opens to protest, and then his hands are probing along my ribs. The sharp pain from blows Vic delivered causes me to bite down on my lip. Shame weights my head and brings my gaze down to my feet. Only when he drops his hands and gives me some room can I look up. He gives me a long, hard look.
That's what I thought.
Who are you to judge me? I ask when I manage to recover my breath. Even then, my voice is little more than a wheezing gasp and lacks my usual bite. His voice deepens, and though it seems impossible, he grows even more imposing.
I'm someone who knows better than to hit a woman.
My suspicions about why he's in prison solidify. This is a man who is capable of great harm. It should scare me, but it doesn't. There is something about the blatant way he displays his dominance that's almost comforting. He doesn't try to hide who he is. When I dated Vic, he tried to be exactly what I wanted him to be. Caring, subservient, kind. I don't have those delusions with King. What I see is exactly what I get. I don't know if it's a good thing or not. I roll my eyes at the thought and gesture with the hand not wrapped around my ribcage. Do you even know where you are? You're in prison. That doesn't say upstanding citizen to me.
I've never claimed to be upstanding, little mouse.
Well, if that isn't confirmation of my assessment, I don't know what is. I glance at the window and see medical is as empty as the infirmary and scowl as I turn back to him. Why do you even care? He steps closer again, and I stiffen, unsure of how my own body will react to his proximity.
Maybe I know what you're going through.
I find that statement unfathomable and almost scoff. Almost. There was something about the way in which he said it that gives me pause. The woman inside, who suffered innumerable assaults, recognizes a kindred soul. I find myself taking a step forward. What do you mean? His eyes meet mine, and he lifts a shoulder. If he were a tiger right now, he'd be wounded and irritable at showing it. I have no doubt if I tried to get close to him that he'd bat me away like an obnoxious fly.
My dad used to hit my mom and me.
He inches a bit.